Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, April 15th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi. Here are our top stories this evening. 12 people are killed and several others injured in a road traffic accident near Zimbabwe's Beitbridge border town. ZANU-PF activists say the MDCT public march yesterday was a waste of time.
It's really much ado about nothing. We've got people who are trying to seek relevance, but their best before date of expiry is long come and gone.
Some Zimbabweans say land should be redistributed to cater for more people.
Those who have many farms, some of those farms should be taken and given to other people. And those who have farms which are bigger than the recommended maximum farm size, they should be cut.
And as Zimbabwean music outfit Mokomba shines in America, these stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Twelve people were killed today when a bus they were traveling in collided head-on with a haulage truck about 45 kilometers outside Beitbridge border town. The horrific crash has since been declared a national disaster, meaning the government will assist the bereaved families with cash. Witness reports said the accident happened after the bus hit a donkey and swerved right into an oncoming truck. 13 critically injured people were rushed to Bulawayo, while several others with mild injuries are hospitalized in Beitbridge, the Herald newspaper reported. State Security Minister Kembo Mohadi and Local Government Minister Xavier Kasukwere rushed to the crash site where they announced that bereaved families will get cash assistance of $200 apiece from the government. The Harare-Beitbridge Highway is one of the deadliest roads in Zimbabwe that claims many lives every year. Beitbridge Town Secretary Lord Ramakapula tells Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo the road needs major attention.
I think it's basically caused by stray animals that cause the roads, make the roads during the night. And if I recall, 15 or 20 years ago, that road was actually fenced, and the such accident caused by animals were quite rare. In this case, the driver actually said he hit a donkey, and that actually caused this catastrophe.
Many people have perished on that particular road. Are there any efforts by the government to dualize it or to fix it?
Yeah, from what we read in the newspapers, that government will soon be dualizing the bridge up to Jerusalem. So we're quite positive that will happen.
What's the state of the roads there in Beitbridge town?
Our road is not that good because we basically receive traffic from up to DRC, from Durban, the whole of South Africa, and we are stressed in terms of the road network. It's not looking good, but we hope that the little money that we get from government, from Denara, we should be able to do the road. But clearly, we need extra funding that comes from government, perhaps in the form of PSIP.
That was Loud Ramakapula, who's Beitbridge Town Council Secretary. He was speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
Hello there. To mark Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary, Studio 7 will be giving out solar-powered radios or T-shirts for our lucky winners. Simply invite 10 friends to join our VOA Studio 7 Facebook page. Ask them to like our page. Keep their names so we can verify your claim. We will also be running a daily competition for lucky winners. You only need to answer a simple question about Zimbabwe's independence. The draw will be conducted April 18th, Independence Day. Don't be left out.
And the question of the day is, how many colors are on Zimbabwe's flag? The answer to our question yesterday about the introduction of land reforms is the year 2000. Thanks very much for the overwhelming response. Some ZANU-PF supporters say a public protest staged by the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai was a waste of time. They say it was an attempt by the MDCT to revive its party, which performed dismally in the last general elections. One of the top ZANU-PF officials, Joseph Chuma, tells Studio 7 Skips Dube the MDCT should just forget about staging such public protests.
It's really much ado about nothing. We've got people who are trying to seek relevance, but their best before date of expiry is long come and gone. So I don't think that yesterday's event was really anything to really write home and talk about. It was just a case of attention seeking, which I don't think bears any more weight in Zimbabwe now.
But, Honorable Chuma, these people were actually expressing their dismay over the levels of poverty, over the missing diamond funds, and all those kind of problems. Is Zimbabwe not having those issues?
Those issues are very real. They are there, and we've spoken about them a lot of times. But those issues are actually emanating from our own selves, conduct as Zimbabweans, collectively, as a whole block. Because if you as a Zimbabwean out there in America demonizing the country, how then do you expect even any investor to come to Zimbabwe and invest in Zimbabwe? So we have been our own enemies. We have been shooting our own feet. And really, what it needs to take now is for that demonstration to be actually directed to the Western economy, which is killing us here. The people that are putting sanctions on our companies.
And that was Joseph Chuma, ZANU-PF lawmaker and Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. However, Obed Gutu, the MDCT spokesperson, says ZANU-PF should brace for more public protests.
It is actually laughable. We expected that from the ZANU-PF regime. They did not expect those kind of numbers. Harare was painted red yesterday in what we termed the mother of all demonstrations. We were just out there to demonstrate that the people of Zimbabwe, under the leadership of Morgan Tsvangirai and the MDC, have had enough of ZANU-PF misrule, have had enough of ZANU-PF mismanagement. And they should actually brace up for an even bigger demonstration. The grandmaster of all demonstrations is on its way. So watch out, ZANU-PF.
When is that master of all demonstrations?
We obviously are not going to give the dates for now for strategic and security reasons, but I can assure the listeners that what they saw yesterday was just a teaser, or that was like a starter when you are about to partake of a huge meal. They are going to see more demonstrations spread nationwide, culminating in what we have termed the grandmaster of all demonstrations that will surely make sure Robert Mugabe leaves office, whether he likes it or not.
That was Obed Gutu, MDCT spokesperson, on the line with Studio 7 from Harare. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo told the state-run Herald newspaper that President Mugabe won his post democratically and said supporters of the opposition should vote him out of power rather than call for his resignation. Moyo said if the people still need Mr. Mugabe, they will vote for him again in 2018 when he's expected to stand for re-election under ZANU-PF.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This month we are commemorating Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary. The 18th of April 1980 was a significant moment celebrated by millions of people, including the late great Bob Nesta Marley, on Independence Day in Harare.
That's the only way we can overcome a little trouble.
What are your thoughts of that moment? And what about 36 years later? Send us your thoughts on our WhatsApp number, 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-202-465-0318. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
As promised yesterday, today we have the second edition of a two-part interview with war veteran Bernard Manyadza, who was known during the liberation struggle as Paka Chipoera. He tells our Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri about, he says, his lack of democracy in Zimbabwe.
The major thing that we gained was in 1980, up until a point when democracy was completely stifled out of the party after ESAP. Because this was in tandem with the poor economic management. Then the subsequent DRC war, and you can name the rest. Up to now, there is nothing enjoyable about all. The long and short of this thing is, we are almost seeing the success of a counter-revolution where the values of this struggle are no more observed. Like the one man, one vote. Because each election time comes with violence. Why? 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 Is there any need of violence as elections approach? Did we fight for the poverty that has gripped the nation? Did we fight for this lack of democracy at all, either in the party or in the nation at large? And my answer is in the negative, which is why I'm saying the values have been thrown through the window. Institutionalized dictatorship has now taken center stage, and the poverty is the order of the day.
Since 1980, there are some of your colleagues who were with you during the armed struggle. They are not yet recognized for their contribution to the struggle. What's your reaction to this?
So as long as the one center of power is power, they may never be recognized. This is my clarion call together with comrades, that matter for democracy. Let's reclaim our democratic space.
And that was war veteran Bernard Manyadza speaking there with Studio 7. In our independent series this evening, we are focusing on Zimbabwe's land reforms introduced in the year 2000. Some people in Chinoy, Mashonaland West Province, say the land issue won't be resolved anytime soon by President Robert Mugabe's party. Those who were left out of the scheme now want a thorough audit and a redistribution of land to poor peasants, including women and Zimbabwean youth. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports.
Some lucky ones who benefited under the ZANU-PF championed land reforms in 2000 are now multiple farm owners. They forcibly took over land owned by white commercial farmers. Urungwe farmer Panashe Mtundusha, who is a pending land ownership Rengo case in Chinoy courts over the land allocation of two tree farms, says indications are that the land issue won't be resolved anytime soon in Zimbabwe.
Unfortunate that 36 years down the line, the land issue has not been resolved at all. And it's not the ZANU-PF government that is in a position to resolve the issue, since it has benefited from the improper redistribution of the land. Its officials have benefited from having multiple farms. It is the next government that is supposed to resolve the issue, but not the ZANU-PF government. It has failed.
He believes that people with multiple farms should surrender them to landless peasants.
We need a proper land audit. It's the only way to go. Those who have many farms, some of those farms should be taken and given to other people. And those who have farms which are bigger than the recommended maximum farm size, they should be cut, left with the proper sizes which conform to the constitution of Zimbabwe.
Mangura villager Onismo Tagarika supports such moves, adding that Zimbabwe should conduct a land audit that should result in the redistribution of land to some communal farmers, including women and the youth.
I think the land issue should be resolved by undertaking another land audit, whereby we are looking at blacks who are having large tracts of land while other blacks are still landless. For example, in Kariba, I find people were displaced by the construction of the Kariba Dam, and they are still landless up to this day. There's no rationale to say the land issue has been resolved.
Melody Chinowaita of Chinoya agrees, noting that the redistribution of land would play a critical role in addressing drought and other issues related to food insecurity. Chinowaita says women should benefit from a fresh land program.
We are left out with no land during the 2000 land reform exercise. Next time, more women should be allocated land if we are to minimize hunger in the country, because women till the land more than men.
A young Chinoy resident, Mishek Rangwani, says there are few people of his age group who were allocated land under the present agrarian reforms.
For the land reform, you'd realize that there is a national youth policy that was set aside. And that policy said 25% of every other resource that can be indigenized has to be given to the youth. But if you go on the ground, you'll find the land reform came. And if you are going to do head count, you realize that not even 10% of the youth had access to land. So from my own perspective, I think the government is not incorporating youth.
But ZANU-PF member Clifford Kupeko, a beneficiary of land reform, says all those who wanted land were given by ZANU-PF government and most people are happy.
So land is very, very critical. And I'm glad to say, having elected Mugabe in 1980, riding on the promise that he is going to redistribute land to people, he has scored on that one. And the majority of people now own pieces of land. Everyone is happy about the land issue.
Some political analysts argue that it is likely that there will be another land revolution in Zimbabwe in the near future, targeted at multiple farm owners. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, tobacco fetches low prices this year. But first, we take a look at regional and international news. The increasingly fierce rivalry between ex-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was on display yesterday at a feisty debate in New York, where a vote next week could shape the direction of the 2016 presidential election. The governor of the U.S. state of Tennessee has vetoed a bill that would have made the Bible the state's official book. Hundreds of rescue workers are combing through rubble as dazed residents in southern Japan work to restore normalcy to their quake-stricken region. And British police have arrested five people on suspicion of preparing terrorism attacks. The Zimbabwe Farmers Union, or ZFU, says tobacco prices at auction floors this year are very low, leaving farmers to suspect that buyers are conspiring to determine them. ZFU Director Paul Zakaria says the prices are as low as 10 cents per kilogram, despite the fact that the quality of this year's crop has improved as compared to the last selling season. Last year, around this time, tobacco was selling at $2.08 per kilogram, although the quality was said to be almost poor. Zakaria tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri farmers should hold on to their produce rather than be robbed of their hard work by accepting very low prices.
This is actually a very, very sad story as we speak, considering that farmers, they put in a lot in terms of labor, in terms of input, and it was a very difficult year. We all know how it was like with the rain and so on. So the care the farmers put into their crop, the management that was demanded, is not commensurate with what they are getting at the floor. You know, it's very desperate and pathetic prices, like, you know, 10 cents a kg or even less. That is not really what farmers were looking forward to when the auction floors were opened.
What are the reasons driving these prices that low?
The buyers and even the floor management systems are not giving any reasons whatsoever. Despite the fact that the quality of the tobacco this year is a lot better than the quality of last year, we don't seem to get the explanation. What we are all thinking about right now, and even farmers are beginning to conclude on some of these issues, even coming to their offices and reporting that they do suspect that there is some collusion amongst the buyers before they get to the floors, where they determine what the maximum price they are going to pay and the minimum price they are going to pay. So this is actually a cause for concern, and we are all beginning to get worried about this development.
That was Paul Zakaria, director of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
Hello, all young people out there. I am Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage. We have a new, vibrant, energetic, inspirational segment. This is Time to Engage. We have hot topics for discussion, like life coaching, motivation, leadership, health, entrepreneurship. This also includes music, social media, and everything else you want to know. We will talk to various experts to help us with these discussions coming from Washington. Send a message to our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. Hashtag Time to Engage.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
19 months ago, the violent extremist group Daesh, also known as ISIL, controlled about one-third of the territory of Iraq and much the same in Syria. Supremely confident after their rapid conquest of these territories, ISIL trumpeted to the world its conviction that its fighters were unstoppable. Today it is clear that Daesh's days are numbered, said Secretary of State John Kerry during a recent press conference in Baghdad. In Iraq, Daesh fighters have not been on the offensive in months. They are losing ground, including more than 40% of the territory that they once controlled in Iraq, he said. Over the past year, Iraqi forces liberated Tikrit and most of the city's population has returned. Kurdish and Yazidi forces liberated Sinjar. Iraqi security forces retook Ramadi. And Syrian Democratic Forces have retaken thousands of square kilometers from Daesh in northeast Syria. The coalition bombing campaign has also seen great success, having cost Daesh tens of thousands of fighters and more than 100 senior and mid-level leaders, including their so-called ministers of war and finance. There is still much to do, but Daesh is clearly on the defensive. Today we are gearing up for recovery. Before displaced Iraqi civilians can return home, significant work needs to be done to stabilize areas that encountered significant levels of destruction due to Daesh's occupation and the fight required to liberate these areas. For that reason, the United States has joined other members of the coalition to contribute a total of over $100 million to the United Nations funding facility for immediate stabilization. The program, led jointly by the UN Development Program and the government of Iraq, helped over 100,000 Iraqis return to their homes in Tikrit. Now it is working to do the same in Ramadi through restoring public services so people can return to their homes. Since the beginning of the crisis, the United States has provided more than $623 million in humanitarian aid to Iraqi refugees. And in Baghdad, Secretary Kerry announced an additional $155 million for Iraqis affected by the ongoing violence. Our support for the Iraqi people, said Secretary of State Kerry, is part of our larger commitment to a future Iraq as defined in its constitution, an Iraq that is unified, pluralistic, federal, and democratic.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This evening, we are featuring Zimbabwean music outfit Mokomba, which has been performing in sold-out shows in the USA. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye speaks with Mokomba's frontman Abundance Mutori, who also strums the bass guitar and does the backing vocals, about their tour.
We're on a short tour of the US and Canada.
And we understand you're just coming from the Apollo Theaters in New York. What was that like for you coming from Zimbabwe?
I know Apollo Theater was kind of like a huge step up for the band, because Apollo Theater is quite like a famous place for a musician to play. And for us as Mokomba, coming from Victoria Falls, a small town in Zimbabwe, and representing the whole Zimbabwe and the artists playing at the Apollo was kind of like one huge thing for us. And when the audience heard us play, they received our music quite well, and it was a wonderful experience.
So which song would you say really captured the audience, and that's one of your favorite here in the United States?
It was a short time to play the Apollo, but you know, the whole concert itself, you know, made the audience go crazy. And we played like three songs, and one of the songs was called Kumkanda. Which is one of the songs that's going to be coming up on our latest album coming up, which is an Afrofusion acoustic album, really not with the fusion part. And that song talks about, you know, us as the Tonga and the Luwale and the Nyanja culture, inviting other cultures to come and learn about our musical styles and a way of doing things.
Tell us about Afrofusion. What does it mean? Coming from Zimbabwe myself, we've always known traditional music, but Afrofusion, it sounds like it's something new. What is it?
Okay, Afrofusion, as I said, we come from Victoria Falls, and Victoria Falls is a border town to other Southern African countries, you know. So it's more like it's a melting pot of different styles, Pan-African music styles. And us, it was an advantage for us growing up in that area to listen to these styles, and we thought of incorporating these styles in our own style, which is the Tonga, the Lubale and the Nyanja, and to fuse that. So that's where the Afrofusion comes from.
And also you have a group of six here. Is that how you started, and how has it been like for you as a group?
Yes, as the six of us, we come from the same neighborhood in Victoria Falls. You know, we went to the same schools, and we've been friends before starting to play music as a professional career. So from that long time when we were at schools, we loved to jam together, and that's when we really discovered ourselves, and we saw that music was something in common between the six of us, and that's how we really started and started playing together professionally after we had done school.
And you were talking about a new album. What can your fans expect from you? Is it something totally different? You've come here to the United States, you've been to the UK, you've been to other countries. Are you taking any influences from some of these countries, or how is that album going to be like?
No, like this album that is going to come out right now, it's more like an acoustic album, you know, without the really much of the fusion, so that our people out there can really feel our culture, which is the Tonga and the Luwale, the way how we are singing, the way how we play our instruments. So it's more like a stripped down show where we only have the bass, the guitar and our percussion, and mainly the vocals.
Give us a taste of what that sounds like.
And that was Mokomba Group talking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye. And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about road traffic accidents as Zimbabwe prepares to celebrate Independence Day. If you wish to join the show, call us at 001-202-619-2077. And before we go, just a quick recap of today's top stories. ZANU-PF activists say the MDCT public march yesterday was a waste of time. And that's all for tonight. Please do stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande. I'm out of here.